Hello, Steve. Hello, Jill. It's time to game classy.
Duh. Joe is low riding. Boop, boop, yeah. Boop, 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 boop.
There
boop,
we go.
Boop, 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 boop.
My friends. Yeah.
They also spoiled a new generic card that is going to be the like defining card of the game, I think.
Earthquake 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Earthquake is the most overrated card in the game.
I know. I just like saying that because for some odd reason it upsets people.
But, well, yeah, because people are like, they've been abused by Games Workshop rules for so long. When like something is clear and cut and dry in Shadespire, they're all just like, I don't know if it works that way. And it's like, no, it totally does.
I don't know if Vader really is Luke's father.
Like, calm down. That's how it works. But this one is called Quick Thinking, and it's a reaction, which is as soon as someone completes a move action, you can play it and move one of your fighters. So that means if you charge, as soon as you stop your charge before you attack, I go Quick Thinking and I move my guy away. Your charge fails. Very, very strong.
Yeah, but you only get one of them.
Right. I mean, it's just like every list is now going to start with one rebound and one quick thinking.
And one earthquake.
I don't use earthquake. I really don't think it's that good. I've never been blown out by that card. I've never even seen, like, all of these situations people talk about, like, earthquake could do this. So I've never even seen it happen.
Did anybody at the tournament use
the two top lists didn't use earthquake? It blows out lists that aren't in the US meta.
Did anybody use more than 20 cards?
Probably, but not the top lists.
Not the top lists.
I'm sure somebody used more than 20 cards.
They were like Optimal or GTFO.
I mean, yeah, you definitely don't want to run less than or more than the minimum ever, like in a card game, unless there's a milling mechanic is like the only reason you'd ever want to run more than a normal amount of cards.
I don't know. I've seen some compelling reasons as to run more cards, but then again, I'm also not a competitive player.
I don't know. Like, so much of it has to be like, well, you got to add this.
Shadespire player.
You got to add this. And then I added more cards. So now I got to put in these extra draw cards. Now I'm bloating the deck even further. I don't think it's worth it.
However, if we're playing my Dagobah Turtle deck, I'm going to want
Son of Skywalker?
Yeah. My Son of Skywalker Yoda Dagobah Turtle deck.
Well, I mean, it's been a very, very long time. But didn't you have to have an exact number of cards in Star Wars?
I think you did.
Because you won by depleting your opponent's deck in Star Wars. That was the only way it worked.
Through attrition.
That was only combat. But you could force drain them as well.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you force drain it, it would cause attrition. Mm-hmm. Yes, that was always attrition. That's where I learned the word.
I thought attrition was only in fights. Whatever. Doesn't matter.
A game that's been dead for a very long time.
And before someone's like, well, actually, it has a very robust fan community that's still producing sets.
No, that's Star Trek, the CCG.
That's true. Star Trek still has a fuck ton. I imagine there's probably a Star Wars one, too. But there's still so many current Star Wars games that seems much sillier than the Star Trek
game. Well, actually, didn't Fantasy Flight just discontinue their Star Wars RPG line?
No, I have no idea.
No, well, yeah, you don't carry it anymore, so you probably wouldn't know.
I didn't even care when I carried it.
I just noticed that a couple sites were offering deep discounts on the proprietary dice, Age of the Force or whatever it was called, Age of Rebellion RPG stuff.
Fantasy Flight is a big fan of canceling things and not ever saying anything about it.
We're canceling it because we said so.
No, like they don't. Like they just stop making it. Don't say anything. Just like, only a few games specifically have they made cancellation announcements, and I think that's only for the ones that they're specifically doing a legacy game of version. Like, for example, I believe that the Warhammer LCG was canceled and they never mentioned it, and then they announced that they don't have the license anymore.
Okay.
But it was canceled before that happened, and then the Call of Cthulhu LCG was announced that it was canceled because they were dropping the Arkham Horror LCG. So if there's not a replacement product, they just don't say anything. They just quietly let people figure it out on their own.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, there hasn't been a set for this game in like a year and a half. You think it's canceled? Probably.
So speaking of Fantasy Flight Star Wars, hold on.
Reset. You can reset the modems now.
Speaking of, I got to play Legion.
It's ass.
In a little in depth.
It's ass.
Did you play it?
I got the demo at Adepticon. It was nothing special. Absolutely nothing special, and a fuck ton of tokens.
The tokens ain't that bad. It's not as bad as some games.
Rune Wars.
It's not as bad as Rune Wars, no. So I got to play it, my buddy bought it, and he, the Star Wars guy who I always talk about, and so he was like, let's run me through a game. So I basically ran him through the little more advanced version of the demo. There were a couple things that I liked and a couple things I didn't like. And so I wanted to make sure I went over those on the podcast, because people are always like, you guys just suck the dick at GW nowadays. And I'm like, well, that's because everyone just plays GW. We're in Chicago.
They have the biggest dick to suck.
You got to suck the biggest dick.
That's right. Yeah. I'm not going to suck the little dick. I'm going to suck the big dick.
Yeah. So, but I know like a lot of people right now are like, oh, like fucking Legion.
No. No human being is like that.
They are
only,
dude,
the mouth breathing Star Wars people are like that.
The guys who do, there was a guy,
I don't know his name. If I did, I would call him out to publicly shame him, but he was at one of the local game stores and he had this fucking giant thing. He's like, oh, I can't wait to play Legion, blah, blah. And like, I just heard him fucking jizzing about Star Wars games. And someone mentioned something else, and he's like, someone asked him, like, do you play this game? He's like, no, I only play Star Wars games. And I was just like, God damn it. Like,
dude,
fuck that
there's
guy.
There's more of them than you think.
No. There's too many. One is too many.
Okay.
That guy, too many.
No. So, things I liked. One of the mechanics that I liked is that in the army building, you get like a deck of cards for like weapons upgrades, and then everything's on the weapons upgrade, and you play it and you attach it to the unit. I kind of like that mechanic a little bit. It's nothing different than any other game ever does. I just kind of like how they did it with the cards.
You like presentation.
The presentation was very nice. You know what? That's
Fantasy Flight though.
Yeah.
Like, they always have good presentation. Even their shittiest games still look nice.
Yeah. What else did I really like about the game? I like that the rules were relatively easy. In typical Fantasy Flight fashion, the rule book was fucking garbage. And
the rule books are always shitty.
They're terrible.
They're laid out so badly,
and they don't make any sense. They're so there's so much ambiguity in what they're doing there. And it would be super helpful if there was just an index at the back that you could be like, all right, dodge. What's the dodge do?
Yes. What's this mechanic? Where? Oh, it's you just got to find it.
You just
got to
find it buried in the rule book. But yeah, the rules were very simple. I mean, the game is infinitely more simpler. It's almost Age of Sigmar simple, almost, where you get two pages of rules. This one's a little more in-depth. I like it. Actually borrows a little bit from, I think, games like Bolt Action, where you got the alternating. That's one thing that I absolutely thought was stupid, was the rule card mechanic. Did you see this in the demo? So at the start of the turn, you get these cards, right? And the cards have little pips on them, so you have 1, 2, 3, 4, and at the beginning of the turn you each pick your card and you put it down upside down, and then you flip it over simultaneously, and whatever number is the lowest gets to go first.
Right.
But they get to activate, put the activation tokens next to units. And then it's alternating, which I enjoy.
I think the demo guy skipped that. He just did alternation.
Yeah. I kind of dug it. I like that the alternating, the whole hidden, like, I'm going to hide this to show what number I got, and then you flip it over, and it's like, oh, well, that's just stupid. Why don't you just dice it, you know?
Yeah. That's actually one of the things I don't like about Age of Sigmar. I don't like the random initiative.
A random initiative. Yeah.
If it had alternating unit activations, it'd be okay, but I don't like that you can take a double turn. I know that's like a big thing for the game, and like you can play to take the double turn. Like, the reason to take a smaller army and get your army on the table first is so you can let the other guy go first, so you have the chance at the first double turn, dictate the flow of the game. I get it.
Yeah, they're never going to change that with the big games. You're never going to see that with 40K or Fantasy. You're never going to see the change of the alternating. I mean, Lord of the Rings did it, and even then, Games Workshop was like, oh, this is... Yeah,
they're sweating.
Oh, like, wiping their foreheads, like, I don't know if I can do this. Alessio is like, oh, mamma mia, I don't know.
Pasta fasool.
Gabagoo. Yeah. Things I didn't like about Legion, of course. Everything that I didn't like about Legion is everything that's Fantasy Flight. I mean, the proprietary dice, it's fucking stupid. It annoys the shit out of me. It's like, well, you got to use the 3 red diamond dice on this.
Proprietary dice are okay if it's a very small number, and you never need more than what you get in the box. Like, if
which
you
is absolutely not the
right, because yeah. if you have like if you have five special dice and they're all you need, that's cool. Like, I am totally okay with that. Like, five dice
until sweet. You lose them.
Well, that's why you want to sell, you know, packs. You know, maybe if you have. You know, well, Shadespire's got it. You get the yeah. dice in the thing, and then they have a fucking set of dice for every faction. Yeah. Seems
so
easy
you can
enough.
Get my special colors.
I did. I bought them all.
I know you did.
Because I got to use. Because if I'm playing any faction, I have to have the matching dice. Also, it's useful because most people just use the core set dice, so I never get my dice mixed yeah. up with theirs.
Also, Steve, when he's in a game, goes whole ham.
It's true. I go.
He
in.
Never goes half ham.
No,
he's whole ham.
We go in. We're going in.
whole ham, Steve. That's what we call him over here at the Game Classy Workshop.
We go in.
Yeah.
Don't doubt. I'm going in. I'm going in.
Yeah. And the proprietary dice. The scale is weird.
Well, I had to make sure that it wasn't compatible with Imperial Assault,
which pisses me off.
Oh, they knew what they're like. That's like if I were an Imperial Assault player, which like there's probably like three of them, like. I would be the saltiest fucking dude on the planet right now. But what? Since they're a huge Star Wars nerd, they're probably just like, more Star Wars games, yay!
Well, also, there is the proprietary base on the figures.
Oh, the special base?
So they have special bases so that you can attach the stupid fucking ruler onto your figure.
I have special eyes.
My brand.
look with your special eyes.
I mean, it's really obnoxious the way that they yeah. have that.
Also, it's a two faction game, and one of them is stark white.
Yeah,
there's also that.
And this is like my thing is like, so I've been painting, and you as well. We've been doing this for 20 years at this point, right? Probably most of us started in the mid 90s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, about 20 years I've been painting. So. And I'm gonna toot my own horn a little bit. I'm a decent painter, but like, and then I got this guy who's never painted a single thing in his life coming up and is like, "How do I paint stormtroopers?" I'm like, "Oh, for fuck's sake!" Well, this is what I told him. I go, "So what you do is you get some white primer, you prime them white, and then you go and you look for a Minwax, the darkest color Minwax you can find."
Yes.
And then what you do is you just dunk it. And you flick off the excess Minwax and
yes.
let it dry overnight.
Yes.
Yeah, I was like, I'm not.
Now you're talking.
When he goes up to me, too, and he says, this guy's selling all the painted Imperial Assault, all the Imperial faction on Etsy for $80. Is that worth it? And I'm like, well, it's not terrible.
That's pretty cheap.
And I said, well, send me a picture. And he sent me a picture, and I was like, yeah, the guy just dipped his models. That's all he
yes.
did. I mean, like, legit, all he did was dip the models and did the basing, and that was it.
That's
so
awesome.
I'm like, well, if you get $80 for that, more power to him. But, yeah.
I'm sure he will.
Yeah, the game itself isn't terrible.
It's got a year at most. At most. People yeah. will be hyped for it when it comes out. Just like hey, remember, like I mentioned it on the Adepticast. Did you enjoy the gigantic Armada tournament?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. There wasn't an Armada tournament.
No, there was. Wasn't there?
Was there three guys playing Armada together? I don't
know. There was an Armada tournament
oh,
there.
Okay.
I saw the Armada.
I'm fairly
ships.
Certain that there was probably more people playing Dark Age at Adepticon than Armada.
Dark Age. I don't think there was any people playing Dark Age.
There were. I walked by their tournament.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
You're like, I used to play that game.
I just looked and I was just like, I tisked at them.
You tisked at
them. Not really. I just looked and I was like, oh, those guys are playing Dark Age. All right, see ya.
Yeah. Actually, I was thinking about this because after the Adepticast, there was a couple more companies that I had seen in the past that were definitely not at Adepticon this year.
Other than Soda Pop and Palladium?
Yeah. There was, and I really do think that the surge for 8th edition it's not that it killed the games, but I think a lot of games are going into hibernation waiting for GW to fuck up again.
They're biding their time. They're retreating back into their holes.
Yes. It's like, they're like Shelob. They're like... They're just waiting to come back for Sam to drop the light of the trees or whatever that thing was that he had.
The light of Elendil, their brightest star?
Yes, the light of Elendil. Which is really, actually, you've never been to Wheaton College, right?
No.
No.
I try to avoid anything in Wheaton.
Yeah. So, yeah, Will Wheaton.
I said all Wheatons. We mentioned
this
before.
Yeah, I texted you this
yeah,
too.
And I said I try to avoid all Wheatons. Will included.
Will included. I went to Wheaton College and they had, because they have a big Tolkien studies program there.
Mm-hmm.
They have like a ton of his letters. They have his writing desk. They have a bunch of his books, like original first prints and stuff like that. So it's pretty cool to go see there. For those who are unaware, Wheaton College.
I have some first print Lord of the Rings stuff.
Well, what, CCG stuff?
No, books.
Like what first edition?
The Lord of the Rings.
You have a first edition Lord of the Rings?
Yeah. I'll show you after the cast.
Oh yeah, you got to show me that from like this from the 60s.
It's they're fucking old ones. I don't know. They're first printing. Whatever they are, they're first printing. All so right, I'll
take
you.
A look. But I'm saying like a lot of like really rare stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And for those who are unaware, Wheaton College is this super religious college out in right by us.
Wheaton for anyone who's not local, Wheaton has more churches per capita than anywhere in the United States.
And more churches than bars, which is very unusual there in the Midwest. But they have the Tolkien Studies program. So they had a bunch of like these Tolkien Studies people and theater people put on a children's production of The Silmarillion. And I was just like,
that's really weird.
It's, I mean, it was fine. It made a lot of sense. But I was just like, oh, this is so terrible. Like, get me and Steve up there to produce a Silmarillion play, and we will give you something that's so fucking epic.
We'd need a lot of money.
Well, we wouldn't even need that much money, because we could do it. We would, like, but I mean, it's just the script itself.
And he fell, and the Silmar slipped through his fingers.
Yeah. All right, so what I need is I need a death metal band to back me up.
And Sauron bowed the knee. Ungoliant slayed her foe. Yeah, that'd be sweet.
Yeah, we could do that.
We need Balrogs. I need more Balrogs!
Just, I'm in the back making Balrogs. I can't make any more Balrogs!
Where's Morgoth? Get me my Morgoth!
They had like really... It was a children's production, but I was like, you could do a little bit better.
Would you say it was dank?
It was about as dank as you could get. It was pretty dank for Wheaton College.
For a little kid's production?
Yeah, I mean, they did, you know, they did all the basic stuff where they're like, they just told the story and they try to tell jokes, but the jokes didn't hit because no one was off book. And I'm like, for God's sakes, get off book, people. You're in a theater production here. Like there's like the guy playing, who's the king of the elven gods. What was his name?
Oh, I don't remember. Oh,
yeah. He's a Urdu or something like that. I don't remember. But he's like sitting there reading off a script. I'm like, oh, come on. I paid a good $6 to see this.
Yeah. No, Udun is the... Flame of Udun is... Oh, maybe it's Udun. No. I think Udun's like the god of the dark god of the Balrogs. I don't fucking remember. Keeping the Tolkien shit in order is like...
Stephen Colbert can do it.
It's fucking super mad. Well, that's because that's all Stephen Colbert actually knows. Everything Stephen Colbert is saying is actually just him thinking about Lord of the Rings and translating it into different speak.
Oh, okay.
Those books are in that case. You're not
going to
get them
out. Oh. They're in the locked case.
Oh.
But I can show you. I can point them to you. I can point them. Yeah.
Yeah. Stephen Colbert and who's it? James Franco. Both huge like Tolkien nerds when it comes to that.
I mean, I'm a huge Tolkien nerd, don't get me wrong, but I'm not at that level. Like I'm not at the level of like, and this happened, that like I have like I can give you the basic outline of stuff, but like remembering specific names and that kind of shit, that is beyond my capacity. I'm into too many other things to like
exactly.
Every
yeah.
time you learn something else, it pushes something out. Like as I'm learning more and more Japanese, I'm forgetting more and more math. Like it's fucking killing math. I don't know why. Like the other day I was like, 7 times 7. The fuck is 7 times 7? Like just like weird basic math shit is like falling out of my head now that I'm focusing on like learning language. It's very odd. And apparently it's actually not an uncommon phenomenon because one of the polyglots I follow on YouTube says that like as they would add languages, they would they basically forgot how to do algebra. Like it was like they were like, yeah, it's really weird. And it was like, but some people have it, like you're like, because you're just not using it frequently, so it's like math is like a language, so there's a lot of stuff that you just remember because it's been drilled into you so hard. But as you're adding new languages, which is why you need to practice all of the languages you know, because you'll forget languages. Like my mom used to speak fluent Serbian and French and something else. I don't even know if she can talk. Like, I don't know if she could go to France and talk to anyone anymore. But like, she was fluent in multiple languages. But she spoke English for, you know, fucking 40 years or whatever now. So all the other languages, they're fucking gone.
When I started learning Polish, I got really, really good at drywall.
Makes sense. That
yeah,
checks
it's just
out.
Like all of a sudden I was just like I was just like stole a lot, and all of a sudden I was like putting up drywall and mudding and taping. I was like, what am I doing? I don't know.
Putting up the drywall at the new McDonald's.
Yeah, new McDonald's. Yeah, I just it was a little bit on the interesting side there. I wasn't quite sure.
But yeah, I feel it's the same. I feel it's the same for nerddom. Like as you remember one thing of nerddom, It's going to push something else out. So if you're super like if you're super into 40K and you start learning stuff about Age of Sigma, you're going to start forgetting stuff about 40K.
You know,
or it'll roll together and you'll be like, yeah, when Rogel Dorn fought Steelheart. Wait, no.
Skarsnik at the Battle of Eight Peaks.
Yes.
What? Rogel Dorn was at the Battle of Eight Peaks?
Rogel Dorn is everywhere.
Reboot Gilliam. Reboot Gulliman.
Reboot Gulliman.
All right, can I go over another thing that...
a lemon, Russ!
That's pissing me off about reading The Horus Heresy. I'm on book
sure.
10 right now.
Oh, sure.
The names are really stupid, and no one can pronounce them the same. I've listened to 10 books on audio tape, and not a single one of them says Reboot Gulliman the same.
That's why... That's the one... The best thing that Tolkien has is they have the, like... Lore advisors?
Yeah.
I don't know what the fuck you call them, but every audiobook that's officially licensed, like for Tolkien, they all pronounce everything the same because they have someone there who's like, this is how this is pronounced, which is weird. You'd think they would do the same for Workshop. Like, they'd be like, no, you say it Pedrus Cantor. Like, that's how you say it. You don't say Padrus Cantor, it's Pedrus Cantor. Like,
Pedrus.
That's how you say that word. Like, yeah. And then they would have someone like double check it and be like, yep, that's right. Because they own the fucking IP. You think they would add the consistency.
Yeah, I think I'm just going to call him Rogledorn.
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 Lemon Russ.
Lemon
Russ.
His
name's Lemon. Lemon Russ. Lemon.
And it's just, you know, that's like a missed opportunity with this, with the Horus Heresy, is you have an opportunity to kind of reshape the legions. So, like, you'd think, like, oh, Lehman Russ, he's you know, Norse, and
he's a tank.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, like, is Norse all of the members of the Space Wolves kind of follow a Norse naming, right? It's all kind of the same. Lehman Russ, not really a Norse name.
Not at all.
No, I mean, like,
not even remotely close.
Not even remotely Norse.
No, their names are all like Sjorg Slorgensen and like
Bjorn.
There's a lot of like son is in like fucking everything, and like daughter, like Eric's daughter, like their name, like from. I mean, I know very little about, you know, Nordic history, but it seems like a lot of their family names are just like a literal family name, like Frederick's daughter. Like, your name's Frederick's daughter because some fucking ancestor you had was named Frederick. Like, then, like, there you go.
Yeah, I think it was like in the 1800s they had it was Danish that did it, and I think it was Greenland or no, it was Iceland. Oh, no, it was Greenland that they tried to push that into, and everyone was kind of like, no, we're just going to go with son and daughter at the end of everything.
Yeah.
Because
the American ones or the Anglo-Saxon is it's all like what your job was, like baker, smith, that shit.
Yeah. There's a lot. It's all blended together.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's all mushed now, but,
yeah.
You know.
It's all just a great panoply of nonsense. But yeah, but then you have like stuff like Fulgrim. Like, there is literally no difference between the Emperor's children and the Ultramarines. Like, just in terms of like names and like there's no like great customs behind it. It's like, oh, we're the Emperor's children. We think we're the best. We're the Ultramarines. We think we're the best. We just don't really say that we think we're the best. Like, the Emperor's children. It's fucking stupid because there's no difference between any of the 18 of these legions.
It's also super gobbledygook because they have like racial differences too in the legions. Like, you have the Khans for the White Scars.
I haven't gotten to the White Scars yet.
Okay, so. Well, the White Scars have Khans, and like they have very Asian like.
Did the other book is read like this?
I don't actually know if that's a Mongolian accent. I'm not sure. I've never heard Mongolian.
Crush your enemies.
The only Mongolian I know. You. The only Mongolian I know is the fucking throat singing, which isn't actually Mongolian. Yeah. But like, my mind got blown this morning because I was listening to someone. I was not looking at the TV, but I had NHK on, and I heard someone speaking, and I was like, "What the fuck language is that?" Because it sounded a lot like Mandarin. But it absolutely was not Mandarin. I'm like, what the fuck? And I look, it was Thai.
Ah.
And I was like, oh. Because it sounds so similar to Mandarin. But
except it's got coconut in it.
At the same time, nothing like Mandarin.
Yeah.
But it's super weird because they're all descendants of the Emperor, and they have like these weird differences.
Well, all the Primarchs are descended from the Emperor.
Right.
And they don't necessarily have to look like the planet that they go to, which is why like Lehman Russ is like this blonde guy without a beard and everything else.
So is that just it? They just landed like fucking the Khan landed on China planet?
Yeah.
That's what it is?
Yeah. Pretty much.
How very George Lucas of them.
Yeah, exactly. They go to the planet of the hats is what it is.
The China
they're,
planet.
They're going to go to China planet. They're going to go
then, to... I don't know if they officially... I don't know if this is official canon now, has been retconned or whatever, but they turned the salamanders from just black guys into like horrible like jet black monsters.
Oh yeah, no, no. that's canon.
That's
now.
Current canon.
They don't have. They're not black, as in terms of like African skin tone. No, they're jet black, black.
Like stone.
Yeah. So they're like, you know what? You could paint your figures so that these guys, you know, look, you know, slightly African in skin tone. I mean, we could show a little bit of racial diversity inside the Space Marines. Nope. We're going to paint all the faces like with the worst black face ever.
Although I will say that's also somewhat horseshit, because I've definitely seen black dudes from Africa who are like almost coal black. Yep. They're like super dark. So like that's just a legitimate skin tone. So to like be like, no, they're like weird ass alien dudes is also bullshit.
It's so fucking bullshit. don't get me started.
That's the worst retcon that they've done.
There's been a couple, but I mean, you could easily say like, you know, Dark Angels are pretty much French or Anglo-Saxon knight culture. You could borrow a lot of names from that, like Arthurian names and stuff like that, mm-hmm. or names that sound relatively Arthurian. And boom, that's theirs. Right. Like you could say Ultramarines are Roman. They take Roman names. Boom, done. Iron Hands, they're all Greek or Spartan. You could take it, boom, all done right there. It's very easy to do that. And like you can even say like Salamanders, Sudan, mm-hmm. Nubian, that side.
Sure.
Perfect, done, boom. But they don't do that. Like everyone is the fucking same. And it's just, it gets really fucking boring because you're like, oh, well, now this guy's... What chapter is this guy from? Oh, he's angry, so he must be the World Eaters. Like, that's the only way you could fucking tell the difference.
But what about the what are they, the steel sharks? I don't remember. They're sharks.
The Carcharodons?
Carcharodons? Weren't they just called, like, the something shark, the space sharks?
I think they're called the Carcharodons.
Oh, they were the space sharks, and they've been retconned to have a different name?
Yes. Okay. Maybe. I don't...
Because I remember there was a chapter named fucking Space Sharks, because their logo was a fucking shark, and they were blue. They were
I believe
stupid.
The Carcharodons are the
ones what they're called
thinking.
Now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
they changed that, like the Rainbow Warriors.
I think that the guy who writes the Carcharodon books, like it's like proprietary to him. Like that's like
that's
it's
his
Mary Sue like chapter. like I'm gonna make my guys as the Space Sharks, but I'm not gonna call them Space Sharks because that's stupid. I'm gonna call them Carcharodons because that's kind of what a shark is.
You know what I'm
called.
Gonna do? I'm gonna make my own fucking Space Marine chapter, and I'm gonna call them the Megalodons.
I'm gonna make the Megalodons, and I'm gonna write 3 books about them.
Yeah, and they're gonna have even bigger shark shit.
And they're gonna have a Primarch named Joe.
All right, sure. Joe's.
Joe.
It's spelled Jaws, but it's pronounced Joe's.
Oh, I like what you're saying.
See? Yes, that's it. Oh, so what's... Primarch, Jaws. It's not Jaws. It's Joe's.
It's Joe Shark. That's his name. It's the Primarch.
Joe Shark. Joe Shark the Primarch.
Joe Shark the Primarch. Oh, God.
Just a fucking big-ass Marine with a shark fin.
No, no, no. It would be a Marine, but instead of arms, he just has 2 sharks.
2 sharks?
Yeah. Or
what about just big, beefy arms with shark heads for hands?
That would work, too. I just like the idea of, like, the model with, like, 2 plastic sharks that you get, like, from the aquarium, just, like, glued on there.
They're just flailing sharks. Listen to me, Angron. I can't pay attention to your arms are flailing.
Do you have sharks for arms?
Yes. they're not even attached by anything tangible. They're just flopping sharks.
Yeah. I mean, the guy who does the Carcharodon books, he actually he's doing some like charity thing for like Shark Week this time.
Nice.
Like he's all like raffling.
So
off
he's really
book.
Into sharks. Is what you're telling
really
me.
Really into sharks.
Right.
Which
I mean,
is,
sharks are cool.
I'm not a big shark fan.
I think sharks are cool.
I mean, they're cool. It's just like,
are you one of those people who's irrationally afraid of sharks?
I'm not irrationally afraid of sharks. I don't like sharks. I'm not gonna go out and be like, we must kill all of the sharks. Sharks have their niche. I'm not going into the ocean because it has sharks in it. That's one of the reasons.
Oh, there's way scarier things in the ocean.
Well, there's
than sharks.
Lots of scary. Don't get me wrong. It's like.
Like Somali pirates. Look at me. I am the captain now.
I am the Somali pirates. Well, that's my thing. Is like we've spent how many millions of years.
Getting out of the ocean?
Of our evolution, getting out of the ocean. Because we're like, holy fuck, everything in this ocean is
nightmare.
Trying to kill us. We get out of the ocean and we're like, oh, hey, you'll be great. Going into the ocean. For funsies.
Hey, I would go into the... We had this discussion at work today, actually, about the ocean. And I said I would only go into the ocean if I was in a fully submerged vessel. Like, I'm not going in there...
Like James Cameron? Like you and James Cameron?
Yeah. We'll go
down the Marianas Trench?
Yep, yeah. We'll go down together in a submersible. I'm cool with that. absolutely no other circumstance. Like the scuba divers, that's fucking insane. Like, crazy shit.
I don't know about... I've been scuba diving. It's not...
Well, I mean, also, I'm talking, when I say ocean, I'm talking about the real fucking scary ocean.
Not like
ocean.
The Caribbean?
Right, not like nice warm weather where a fucking dolphin swims up to you and he's got a sandwich. And you're like, where'd you get this sandwich, dolphin? Whatever.
The Great Pacific Garbage Patch. Yeah. That's a garbage sandwich.
Yeah, it's a garbage sandwich.
Great garbage fish.
Delicious.
Yeah.
Crunch.
Yeah. No, you're talking like the deep black ocean.
Yeah,
where
the scary ocean.
Where you're going to see like one of those colossal squids come up.
Right.
Yeah.
You're like, your fucking flashlight pans and you're like, what was that? And it pans back until there's just a giant squid eating you. That's the ocean I'm talking about. And you're like, ah, squid!
Squids!
Oh no, squids! Squids are fucking scary as shit, man. They're super aggressive too.
Yeah.
Scary.
Well, they just, did you see the video that they just put up? One of the giant squid that came up in the... Tokyo Harbor.
Oh yeah, yeah. Fucking just huge.
And it
wasn't, squid,
and it wasn't even that big.
Yeah,
it was just a big squid, but yeah. It wasn't as big as they normally get.
The really, really big ones you never find because they stay low.
Well,
they
yeah.
find like parts of them.
Well,
according
to
are.
My cryptozoological websites that I frequent quite often, the colossal squid will grow up to 45 feet in length.
The Squatch.com.
Squatch.com.
No, TheSquatch.com.
TheSquatch.com. I was actually
Squatch Watch.
I was actually just reading a book about the Yeti, and it was pretty interesting.
You know what? You should own and operate a Sasquatch hunting website called Squatch Watch.
Squatch Watch. I'm sure it already exists.
I don't know about that.
I will.
You know what? There's a lot of solid ideas I've had for like naming conventions like that, and I've looked, and they don't have names.
Well, let me. I have an internet box right in my hand.
Clownpenis.fart.
Squatch Watch.
Squatch Watch.
Okay, let's see.
Squatchwatch.com would be what I would choose.
Well, there is a Squatch Watch Facebook page. There is Squatch Watch Gear, which is home of Bigfoot outdoor gear. There is a movie called Squatch Watch.
Yes.
There is a hashtag Squatch Watch on Twitter.
But there's no Squatchwatch.com, which means
there's Squatch Watch,
it's up for grabs.
There's Squatch Watch -FTC.org.
Mm-mm.
So I don't necessarily see
you could get squatchwatch.com.
I could.
See?
Let me just double check.
Is the domain up for hosting? Is it on GoDaddy? Show me GoDaddy.
It is available.
Yes.
On squatchwatch.com is for sale.
See?
I could buy it for $1,995. Someone's probably sitting on it.
Bam. There you go. Yeah. You could have Squatch Watch and it could be yours.
Yes.
And then you could be the owner and operator of SquatchWatch.com.
I was reading a book about the Squatchwatch, about the Yeti, and the guy makes a pretty solid argument that the Yeti does not exist, and it is a juvenile form of the Tibetan polar bear or brown bear or whatever it is.
I mean, that's reasonable. I imagine most of the, like, if you want to legitimize any of the weird crypto sightings, they're always another.
Squatch is real.
They're always another animal.
The Sasquatch.
Like.
North American Sasquatch.
Have you ever seen one of those bears that are walking on two legs that look really weird? That's probably your Sasquatch right there.
Sasquatchus Americanus is real.
Sasquatchus Americanus.
I'm assuming that's his scientific name.
That's awesome.
He is real, and he's magical. And we're going to be friends someday.
What, that fucking movie? There was a movie on Mr. Science Theater 3000, Into the Wild, with fucking Bigfoot.
Oh, God, that's so terrible.
And he's like, Bigfoot, help me! And Bigfoot's magic. He's like suddenly magic. And there's like, so he gives Bigfoot Coca-Colas. That movie was fucking atrocious. But it was funny because it was on Mr. Science Theater.
Yeah.
I was watching, I've been randomly watching a new Mystery Science Theater 3000 and then an old Mystery Science Theater, like every bounce
between
each other.
I like the new one. I kind of hope that they keep doing it.
On the old one, I just watched a fucking Japanese knockoff of Planet of the Apes.
Sandy Frank.
Fucking hilarious.
Sandy Frank.
Absolutely absurd.
Yeah, the Fugitive Alien is the other one on there by Sandy Frank, and that's one of my all-time favorites from that. Because what Sandy Frank used to do is he was the guy that would take all the old Japanese TV shows
movies.
And then recut them into movies for English and dub them in, and they don't make any sense, and they're terrible.
They cut scenes out, and like
it's just like it happens to be like there was some TV show about like an alien guy, and they just took like 18 episodes and cut them up and made them into a movie,
right?
And then you get Robotech, which is on Netflix now. Robotech's on Netflix.
Well, yeah, Harmony Gold lost the license, so it's going to be on a lot of things now.
I'm excited. I haven't watched Robotech in years.
Is it under Robotech or is it Macross?
I believe it's actually in a Robotech.
Okay, then probably the old dub. That'd be pretty cool.
Which I prefer because I'm not you. And I'm like...
You know what? I was never very into Macross at all. I had one Robotech toy. Just one of the pilots with this... Like, I remember his cool-ass fucking helmet.
I had the motorcycle.
That's all I really remember. My buddy had one of the planes. And I thought it was a Transformer. But now that I'm older, I realized it was not a Transformer. It was a Veritech fighter.
It was just a jet with legs.
Oh, yeah.
And arms.
Right. But I thought it was a Transformer.
Because for some odd reason, people thought that's what kids wanted.
Well, no. It had the three modes. It had the plane. It had the walking plane. And then it had the robot form.
Oh, okay.
There were the three. All three forms were contained in the one thing. It was for... I can't remember. There was a very specific reason they had the fucking arms and legs plane. I think the arms and legs plane was for urban combat. I don't remember. They had a fucking specific reason for it, and I don't remember what. Like, there was a reason for the half transformer. Maybe because they could go to the plane stage faster from that middle thing. So like, if they needed to have like a quick escape route, they could do that. There was a specific reason that I don't remember. Someone in the audience, I'm sure, will tell us.
Yeah, I'm sure someone will.
Because, I mean, they look weird. Like, they're definitely not rule of cooled because they look like a plane with arms and legs. Just like, I mean, it's kind of neat. It's like, that plane's got a machine gun. That's cool. But, like, it's not like, rad.
I like how it had a hand that was holding the machine
gun. Right, it's holding a machine gun.
Because for some odd reason, that was...
Well, they had built-in machine guns, too.
Yeah, they did. Well, I know, but I mean, it's like... So, like, the
things, why not have it all?
Like, it's like, we should build this thing a hand just in case it needs to grab a gun. Well, why don't we just build guns into the arm? That would make more sense, wouldn't it? No.
Do both. Do it all.
Why not both?
Yeah, do it all.
Yeah,
The kitchen sink approach to military robot design.
There was a great fan theory years before, like, internet fan theory became a thing, where they were, I might have talked about this on the cast a long time ago, but they talked about how Macross in Robotech was the Pacific theater of World War II as told through sci-fi, and the Western European theater was Exo Squad.
Oh, all right.
So, like, that's like the...
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I loved Exo Squad when I was a kid.
Exo Squad awesome. Is actually one of those things that I could see doing a reboot.
J.T. Marsh.
And having it be really cool.
Oh, and the toys were fucking rad.
Oh, the toys were great, but they were...
So cool.
Well, A, expensive as shit... And B, they fell apart like garbage toys.
Depending on which suit you had, that was more or less accurate.
Yeah.
JT Marsh's suit was robust as fuck, because I had that one and it never broke.
It was Robusto?
It was Robusto.
Was it Robusto Gulliman?
My buddy had the one with the guy with the specs, the tech guy that had like the fucking radio thing on it. That thing fell apart like an idiot. You looked at it funny, it fell apart. And I'm flying around with JT Marsh like, yeah! His ship's in fucking pieces.
Do you remember there was that toy from the 80s that had, it was like a... It was all grappling hooks. Like, you'd string them around your room. It was all on strings, and they would just, like, zoom across the room.
Wasn't that a G.I. Joe?
No. Well, there was G.I. Joes that had that.
Yeah.
But it was, like, a specific toy line that was, like, every character
I don't remember the toy line. I remember the G.I. Joes that had the grappling shit.
Yeah. No,
and the parachuters. Those were the parachuting G.I. Joes are my favorite, because you go up to the fucking third floor or second floor of the house and you just throw them out the window and watch them fucking go
down.
At
Mr. Rich Kid growing up in a two-floor house.
That's pretty cool.
You know how many floors I had? None.
You didn't have any floor. You just slept basement. In the dirt.
Slept in the basement. No, we had a one-story house. But the, the fucking. I was at a flea market not too long ago, and I saw a bag full of those toys. I'm like, oh man, I'd love to have that in my office, just strung around all over the place. And my wife was like, why? Why would you do that?
Tell her because it's cool.
Yeah, exactly. And then I would end up with my kid choking on one of them. And I would have to deal with that.
Probably.
I would.
You'd be like, my nostalgia killed my child.
Nostalgia killed my child. Speaking of, I saw Ready Player One.
I knew you were going to bring it up.
I know. You know I was.
The worst.
Steve hasn't even...
The worst.
He hasn't read the book. He hasn't seen the movie.
As I said, I followed along with a full fucking reading of that book online, and it was the worst. The most poorly written garbage possible. And the worst thing is that it's not done ironically. It's just done out of actual... identifying yourself through the media you consume love,
yeah.
Which is the worst. Like, it's written by the worst type of person for the worst type of people. It's awful.
Yeah, my biggest problem with the movie, and the movie is perfectly serviceable. The 25% of the live action of that movie that Steven Spielberg directed was amazing.
I'm gonna go on a limb and say, as a film, it's probably a bit more palatable because having... references shot all over the screen is faster and more upbeat than having a literal page of like, I was driving the Ghostbusters Ecto-1 car, and then I also had the DeLorean, but just like fucking rattle. It's like, I know all those things.
Yeah, it's very true. However, my biggest problem was that the movie itself didn't do enough of like the real in-depth nostalgia stuff that he does in the book. Like in the book, there's a whole sequence where he has to solve, what was the, it's
also, isn't he like a pro joust player? Nobody plays fucking joust.
Yeah, well, he has to play joust because he goes through, which dungeon manual? It's one of the Dungeons & Dragons manuals. So he ends up finding the dungeon that's described in the manual. It might be Tomb of Horrors, if I'm not mistaken.
There would be the big-ass green face if it was Tomb of Horrors.
No, it wasn't Tomb
of Horrors. Then it's not Tomb of Horrors. Yeah.
But anyway, he goes through, he does the manual, And at the end, he meets up with a lich, of course, because that's what you have to fight at the end of every module that Gary Gygax wrote.
Gary Gygax really was into liches.
Yeah, and the lich challenges him to joust, is what it is, and he has to beat the lich at joust.
I'm so upset.
But I mean, like, that stuff would be fun to see. They didn't do anything like that. Like, the first challenge that he has to do is a car race, and it's like, well, What game is this car race? Is it?
It's just a car race.
It's just a car race. It's not pole position. Yeah, exactly.
See, that would have been cool if they just started blasting the pole position song.
or Spy Hunter or any of those other race games.
Like, I think I would have more.
Or Daytona USA.
Daytona.
No. Daytona.
Let's go away.
Daytona.
I would have a lot more respect for it if it had its tongue firmer in its cheek, but it's so serious.
But that's, yeah, I would have liked it a little bit more too. And I was kind of, and the way they did it, I was like, oh, this is kind of just a generic race. That's fine. And then like the second one in the book, he has to go through, I'm sorry if I'm spoiling this for anybody.
I'm sure they all had Loot Crate at the time like everyone else, so everyone's got a copy of Ready Player One moldering somewhere in their house.
Yeah. He has to go through line by line through the movie War Games, right? And you're like,
shall we play a game?
Exactly. And like he has to like recite the lines along with it. In the movie, they go through The Shining, which is a little bit different. I mean, I kind of like that they did that.
Was it the Kubrick Shining?
Yeah, the Kubrick Shining.
Did they actually put them into the Kubrick movie?
Yeah.
Oh, all
right. Pretty neat. It's a neat little sequence. But it ends so fucking stupidly that you're kind of like, okay. And then the third challenge is in the book, he has to play Tom Sawyer, I think, by Rush on the guitar. And in the movie, he just has to play, Dungeon from Atari. And you're just kind of like,
that game sucks.
Yeah, well, I mean,
it's a bad Atari game.
Well, but the thing is like, In the book, you get a lot of like mixes of like, tabletop games and like video games and movies and TV and all of this stuff. And in the movie, it's just kind of like, it's a lot of video game
generic
stuff.
Generic questing.
Yeah, generic questing video game stuff. And some of the stuff that bothered me too was like, okay, this guy's supposed to be like obsessed with the 80s. Well, why the hell are the modern Ninja Turtles in there? You know, like the CG ones from the Michael Bay movie.
Oh yeah, it should
like
be,
it shouldn't be, it should be like
the cartoons.
Yeah, the cartoons.
The shitty 80s cell drawn, hand drawn ones.
Exactly. Like that's like the type of shit that should be in there. Yeah. Instead, they got like their show. They're like, oh, there's Master Chief. I'm like, this guy wouldn't give a shit about Master Chief.
Yeah, if he liked the 80s, he wouldn't give a flying fuck about Master Chief.
Exactly. I mean, there's a couple sequences in there.
Master Chief, more like Master Queef.
Yeah. There's a couple sequences that I got. I was like, this is exactly what I wanted. Like, some great stuff that I was like, this is perfect. This is exactly what I wanted from this movie. And there's other ones where I'm like, you didn't go far enough. You should have pushed it just a little bit.
So you'd say that the ball was dropped? As someone who's not actively hostile towards Ready Player One, would you say that the ball was dropped?
Yes and no. I mean, my big fear is that if it had been too much, the movie had the possibility of going way too much. It just didn't go far enough. It's like there was that fine line that just didn't reach, and so it left me wanting.
I see.
However, the one thing that I did love was Alan Silvestri did the music for it, and Alan Silvestri is the guy who did the music for Back to the Future.
Yeah, he does great music.
So you get a lot of like hints of certain like things, but not enough where you're like, oh, that's the Back to the Future soundtrack. It's like, oh, he's hinting at the back. It's really well done.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, it doesn't matter what it is. If I hear that from the Back to the Future soundtrack, it always gives me, like, I always, like, feel the hairs on the back of my neck stand up. I'm like,
that little riff.
Yeah. It's like, it's so, it's like the
Now that's a good fucking movie. Back to the Future.
Back to the Future
great movie.
Is the most perfect script of all time.
Back to the Future is a really good movie. I like it a lot.
I would challenge anybody to find a better scripted movie than Back to the Future.
I don't know. I can't really like throw one out there because it's just it's really good. And like it's like comparing the movie. Like I mean, arguably you could go with another like 80s tentpole like godlike film like indie.
Indiana Jones and the Temple of, and Raiders of the Lost Ark, I think, is a perfect movie. However, script-wise, like just in terms of the
just
writing,
dialogue,
and like the way that the script works, there's like so many like, you know, everyone always talks about movie details. Like, you know, when he travels back in time, he runs over the pine tree, and the Twin Pines Mall becomes Lone Pine Mall. Like, that's like it's very, but there's so many other things in that movie that are just so like. It's so perfect, like you never catch them. Right. That there's so many of them.
Yeah. I don't know. It would have to be. It would have to be another one because, like, it would have to be another one of those type of movies. Because now, like the newer movies, it's not like newer movies are like worse, but newer movies are different.
Newer movies they're just generic. They're designed for like worldwide audiences,
right? So they have to be super consumable. They're Twinkies.
Yeah, they have to be super consumable. Yeah,
they're Twinkies. Like let's say old movies like 80s movies were escargot, and a lot of people like escargot, but a lot of people think it's really gross.
I would go with like the late 70s independent film movement as like the escargot, like the real
sure.
Like
what I was saying, like
easy
older,
writer shit.
Sure,
you know?
older movies were a lot of times an acquired taste or like very specific.
Yeah, acquired taste is a good way.
Yeah, now movies are very much Twinkies. They're like, everyone kind of likes them. You might not think they're really great, but you'd probably eat a Twinkie. Like, if someone's like, hey, you want a Twinkie? Most likely would be like, okay. Or you wouldn't turn it down, like, out of disgust. You wouldn't be like, ew, I won't eat a Twinkie. That's disgusting.
What about the Twinkie?
It's cake and it's frosting. Like, it's pretty fucking good. But it's not anything that's going to, like, make... You're not going to, the next day, you're not going to go like, man, that Twinkie was really good. Like, that's yeah, you're going to eat it and forget about it.
Yeah, exactly. And the 80s, once you hit the 80s blockbuster, once you hit Jaws...
Jaws absolutely launched tentpole summer movies.
Yeah, once you get Jaws, then you get like Star Wars and fucking Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and it just keeps going.
I like that movie.
Close Encounters is a good movie. E.T. is the one I don't like.
Not only do I not like E.T. movie, E.T., I think E.T. is a bad movie, but E.T. is also a kid's movie, so you kind of have like...
It's a weird-ass kid's movie.
It is a weird-ass kid's movie.
What about
kid's movie.
Mac and Me?
So, Mac and Me. I used to see the Mac and Me video at fucking Hollywood. I would just be like, what the fuck is this? That fucking weird ass
I saw Mac
thing.
And Me in the theater.
Oh. Ooh.
My father was obsessed with taking us to the movies over the summer.
So
no matter what, as long as there was a movie available, we went and saw. I saw Last Crusade in the theater like 7 times that summer. The summer of 1989 was...
The Penitent Man.
The summer of 1989 was the greatest summer of movies probably in the history of the world. I mean, just starting off with...
I was 5.
Yeah, well, I was 8. It was like perfect movie time for me.
Yeah.
I was like Batman, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, UHF.
I do have the faintest memory of seeing Lethal Batman in the theaters. Like the faintest fucking memory of seeing it. I remember really liking the music and falling asleep.
For those who are too young to understand... Batman was such a phenomenon that people were getting the bat symbol shaved into their heads.
Batman was huge, and everyone thought it was going to be a fucking pile. Like, before that movie came out, everyone was just like, Batman. And like
Michael Keaton, the guy from Mr. Mom?
He could never be a good Batman.
He was great in Gung Ho, but come on.
I still stand that's the best Batman movie.
Batman, the 89 Batman
just
movie?
Just Batman, yes. I think that's the best Batman movie. Like, I think it is. I mean, other than... Batman the TV movie.
That's the best.
That one's really
hands
good.
Down.
That one's really good. Some days you just can't get rid of a bomb. And Caesar, he still refuses to shave his mustache, Romero.
No, it's I don't know.
It's really fucking good.
If I'm gonna go with best Batman movie,
because I'd say Dark Knight's the best Joker movie.
I would probably say The Dark Knight is my favorite Batman movie. Well.
But the problem I have with The Dark Knight and the Bale movies in general, except for the first one, which is arguably the weakest.
No, the third one, Dark Knight Rises, is terrible.
It's arguably the weakest. Some people think the third one is more entertaining than the first one because there's more shit that happens in the third one, which is undeniably
true.
Oh,
we have Bane.
also there's Bane voice. Yeah, the first one's the most boring. Yeah, so there's that. But and the third one also has the Bane voice.
It is the Bane voice.
Which is one of the greatest achievements ever in cinema history. Oh, let's not stand on ceremony here, Joe.
I was born in it.
But the problem with those movies is they're not so much Batman movies as they're movies that are like about things that happen to Batman. Like
they're James Bond movies.
What's the most iconic thing that Batman does in any of those movies? You can't answer it because he doesn't do anything really cool.
When he talks to Alfred, and Alfred says, "The size of a tangerine."
Yeah, or he's like, "On that day, sir, I won't want to." Like, there's nothing that Batman
I'm going to order a Chablis.
Batman vs Superman, for all its flaws, Batman is fucking awesome.
Oh, I love Batman.
Batman is awesome.
I love Batfleck.
Because that movie, like the things I remember about, I've seen that movie exactly once. I'll probably never see it again. But everything I remember from the movie being awesome, all Batman scenes. Batman's fucking sick as shit in that movie. He does some badass shit.
When he's doing his cross training and hitting a tire with a fucking sledgehammer.
Or when he goes in that fucking building and just like beats the loving shit out of like six fucking goons. Like, that was awesome. Batman's awesome in that movie. But in the Dark Knight trilogy, what does Batman do that's cool? Like, the only thing that I think, like, the only quotable
Rachel.
Shit. Right. The only memorable shit Batman does is done in a mocking way. It's like, swear to me. Like, everything.
Alfred, you need to come pick me up. I've been set on fire.
I'm not wearing hockey pants.
Okay, hockey pants.
Like, yeah. So that's why I have a problem saying that they're the best Batman movies. Because while I think Heath Ledger and the overall film, Dark Knight, is incredibly good. It's a
need to cut 20 minutes out of it, but
right. Yeah. Well, that's all Nolan movies. Nolan movies are too long.
It's all movies.
Nolan movies, very specifically, are like way too long. As far as
Nolan movies are 45 minutes.
As
long.
Far as yes, there you go. Nolan movies are 45 minutes too long instead of the normal 20. Except for Lord of the Rings, which you need to have more footage of, more and more and
just,
more,
just more footage, just more, more
just
footage
put in
there.
More. But so like Batman's not the big thing for the movie, so I have a hard time saying it's the best Batman movie because Batman in the Keaton Batman is very cool. Like,
Batman's got like 5 minutes of screen time in the Keaton movies.
Which is why I think he works so well because he is like that. Like, there's the mystique of Batman. Like, oh, what's the deal? You know,
I like the '89 Batman, Michael Gow, Alfred.
He's fucking fantastic.
Commissioner Gordon left quite unexpectedly.
It's so good. Vicky Vale plus Prince, the Prince soundtrack.
The 1989. Had Robert Wool in it is the reason why it's so great. You know, it's like King of the Wicker People. It's Japanese. How do you know? Bought in Japan. The Robert Wool. It's so dumb. Anyway, considering the fact that we wasted this entire cast and talked about like two things gaming wise. Do we have any other gaming stuff that we need to talk about? I'm just gamed out because of Adepticon. It's like,
I mean, I'm not gamed out, but like I really have no news from Adepticon. Adepticon had all the big news, the fish people, the fucking, you know, shades, but there's the two new Shadespire factions coming out, look really cool.
Yeah.
Talk a little about that.
Yeah. There's the,
Forest Riders and Magor's Fiends.
Magor.
Magori.
you gotta
tip your corn hat, Magori.
McCorn hat.
McCorn hat.
McGore.
McGorney.
Yeah, they're doing the Forest Riders, which are super fast and they shooty.
Yeah, they look really good, so I'm excited to play those guys.
I hope also
very, very happy. The biggest thing I was worried about is that you were going to be able to use the current Stormcast and the current corn cards with the new warbands. Cannot.
You cannot.
They have their own cards.
Oh, that's good, man.
Yeah, they have different symbols. They are
Does
their own
Magor have a little trilby? Magor.
You can make him one. Well, no, that's the thing. He's the one who's getting Magor, so he's not going to do it.
Oh, so all the other guys have
the
trilbies.
Yes, they have the trilbies, so they all go Magori.
Do they have katana blades?
No. His flesh hound's really good too. His flesh hound's cool. He's got a sweet upgrade where you when you hit models, instead of just pushing them away, you can push them in any direction, which is sweet.
Ooh.
Cuz you can run up, charge, and grab a guy and throw him back towards the rest of your fighters, which I like a lot.
Well, let's see if Tabletop Gaming News has anything.
Oh, Fireball Island
that just popped
fucking
up today.
Huge. That funded in, it got almost $1 million in an hour. I've shit on nostalgia quite a few times. I've also talked about how nostalgia is valid in a few times. This is one of the cases where, man, they're doing it right. They're doing it better. They're not just doing a remake. They're not just doing a rehashed version, like a reprint, I should say.
Yeah.
They're actually going back and improving the game. but still keeping the same spirit, the 3D terrain, the big fucking head.
Yeah, fireballs.
Shooting fucking marbles out, and they're doing expansions, which is cool as shit. There's one that it has got, did you see the bees? There's one that's kind of fucking, it's got yellow marbles for bees, and there's a beehive, and you dump the beehive into the fucking volcano and shoots the marbles out, and those are bees.
That sounds a little much, but
bees. So yeah, I was super excited to see that. It doesn't look too expensive when you take into account how much.
It's actually, if you just get the base game, I think it's only like $50.
Yeah, and I think the base game plus all the expansions is $120.
$120, yeah.
And considering an incomplete version of Fireball Island will run you like $200 on eBay right now, I think that's a pretty fair deal. This is a game I was too young to play because it is from the 80s, so I was too little to play it, but I remember having it and I remember playing with it a fuck ton because it was a very sweet toy because you had the little bridges.
It was all 3D terrain.
Right.
Yeah,
you have little bridges that you set up and the marbles could hit the bridges and knock the bridges. So I would just set up the bridges and set up the explorers and then fucking shoot the marbles out of the big tiki head and, you know, knock shit over. Very fun.
And actually, this is something based off two podcasts ago. They're doing a Street Fighter miniatures game.
Oh, right. Yeah. From Angry Joe, the YouTube guy.
Yeah. I guess.
The figure. Okay. Here's my problem with that. The figures look fucking awesome. Super cool. The fuck are you gonna do a Street Fighter miniatures game? It's
they're
just
like
so...
and they're like 80mm figures.
Well, yeah, they're really nice, big looking figures. I think as far as like from a collectible standpoint, it would be pretty cool to like buy and paint up some Street Fighter minis to have on your shelf.
Okay, we're gonna make a pact amongst the two of us, and Cole, you're included in this too. Is if Pat buys the game, he has to paint his own fucking figures.
Oh yes, he absolutely has to paint his own.
Yeah. He's gonna come to us. He's gonna be like, hey, can you paint up this?
I will offer to show Pat how to paint.
Can you paint up this?
Pat can paint with me. I'll show him how to do it. I'll practice on Zangief and show him how to paint.
Would you like to see him rage quit while he's painting his Dalsim?
I think Pat could handle painting. I think he could do it.
I don't know.
I would need to show him the easy startup, but I think he could do it.
You think he's gonna
Well, I think a lot of people when they start painting they overthink. And they think it's like really hard and like they try to do like a bunch of like there was a guy who was asking for advice in his painting on Facebook today and like I looked at his arm. I looked at his models, and like they're orcs from Shadespire, and these are the third time he's ever tried painting. And okay, so they were cleanly base coated and washed. It looked just fine, like no problem. The yellow, I didn't see any brush strokes. Didn't see thinned his paints. Looked good. The eyes were a fucking nightmare, and I was like, dude, just get some Micron pens. Like this will help you with eyes. You just draw a little circle around it, you'll have eyes done, and it'll look nice. But I think a lot of people don't go that route. Like I don't know if he followed his own, if he just followed reading a guide or whatever. But I think a lot of people when they start painting, they try to do like advanced shit right away, or thinking it's going to be easy. That's why you have models like when people are first starting out, where they get really chunky, like goofy looking paint jobs, like their
very
faces.
Meat crab paint jobs.
But this guy, he just went with the base coats. And then the wash. And it looks so much nicer than almost any other like person's starting models. And that's why I think it's awesome to kind of start now rather than when we were starting, because the hobby is a lot more accessible because of washes and like the way specifically Workshop has done their paints, where they say like base, layer, wash. And like if you just follow one of their many guides, your models will end up looking significantly better than before, which was just kind of like, yeah, you just get paints and paint them. And you're like, but how?
So you're not just trying to paint blood red over a black
undercoat.
Yes,
blood red over chaos black. The nightmare. Now you have Mephiston red, which says base, which means you put that down first. And you know what? It covers black pretty fucking well.
I like how you're saying that. And when I was just before I came here, I was painting some epic figures.
Oh no.
And I was totally doing all like the little like chapter markings on the shoulder pads for every figure that I had.
Ew.
I know. I was because I've been painting my Sons of Horus, and I was like, I have some epic. I'm going to paint some epic Sons of Horus. So I'm sitting there like, dee, 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 dee. I'm the literal worst for that. And I regret it too, because I'm like, well, I was looking
now
online.
I've ruined my epic models.
No, I didn't ruin. I was looking online and I was like, God, I'm always looking up new like inspiration and paint jobs and things like that. And then I was typing in like, you know, Horus Heresy, Sons of Horus, Army. And then I saw someone had did an epic Sons of Horus Army, and I was like, oh. And so I was looking at all the models, and I'm like, I miss painting Epic. I'm going to go home. But I was like, I have other stuff I need to paint. I can't start a new Epic army. I'm going to paint one thing and get it out of my system because then I'm going to realize how much I fucking hate painting Epic. And sure enough, it worked. I feel pretty good about not painting anymore.
See, I'm the opposite. When I started painting Warmaster, like I was like, I'll just paint some Warmaster. I painted every Warmaster thing I owned. Like, in one shot. I painted everything.
That would suck for me.
I loved painting it. I love painting Warmaster. But I sold it.
Yeah.
I sold it all.
But I have a lot of Warmaster.
You know, Warmaster is a game that it's just one of those things where I just had to give it up. Because, like, as much as I love Warmaster, I think it's a great game. It's just too difficult to play. Like, and not, like, obviously, like, the difficulty of the game. But it's just too hard to, like, find someone who wants to play it. Or someone who has their own shit. Who isn't a toolbox. Or lives
that's
a million miles away.
That's the hard part, is not finding someone who's a toolbox.
Right. Well, also like a million, like people who live a million miles away. Because Epic's still got, I think, a fairly decent European scene. We are not in Europe, turns out. We are in the middle of nowhere, United States.
You could go to Europe and find like a guy who's going to play any game within.
That's true. But Europe's also a lot smaller, so it's easier to find people.
Yeah.
That's why Japan always has the edge in fighting games, because like the American scenes are all spread out throughout our gigantic fucking country. In Japan, all of the good players live 15 minutes from each other and they all play together every week.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, yeah, we just play together at locals. What, do you guys not have locals? It's like, I'm from a place that doesn't have any other person. I'm from a state that doesn't have anyone else who plays fighting games. I'm by myself. And the same thing goes for minis games or card games or anything else.
And like, for some odd reason, my state has two senators represented.
Yes, exactly. If you don't have a local scene for it, just don't do it. Like, yeah. And that's my gaming advice to the cast. If you don't have a local scene, no matter how much you love that game, unless you are completely content with it never being anywhere but on your shelf, don't get into a game.
And that's why I have two shelves full of Babylon 5, a Call to Arms miniatures.
Babylon 5.
I was talking with the guys from Arena Rex, and I was like, it's the one game I can't give, like, I want to sell it, but
no one's going to buy that.
No, it goes for a decent amount.
It's like War Machine.
No. It goes for a decent amount. It truly does.
Are they just Babylon 5 collectors?
Babylon 5!
I guess they are probably dying for collectibles at this point.
Yeah, and I was talking with the guys from Arena Rex, and I was explaining, like, it's the one thing I just can't give myself to give up. Like, I love these figures, and I like the really nice big metal spaceships.
I hope they get that show on fucking Netflix at some point, because I'd like to watch it. Yeah.
And the guy from Arena Rex is like, If you do get rid of them, give me an email, because I'm like, see, it's like you can't, like,
who wants the Babylon 5?
Yeah, Babylon 5. All right, go to play an arbitrary.
Who needs girls when we have the Babylon 5 collectible card game?
I'm going for my Minbari deck. Go to planetarbitrary.com for Planet Arbitrary needs. You can follow me on Twitter at Planet Arbitrary. You can follow Steve at
I am Command Throw.
And listen, you little shits, the best way you can help out this podcast is like, comment, subscribe on iTunes. We haven't gotten any new iTunes comments in a while. I'm getting a little upset about it.
Do people still use iTunes?
I hope so, because that's like how you raise in the rankings.
I don't fucking know, dude.
Yeah, you little shits. Where else? Oh, yeah, you can listen to our sister podcast, Play On Podcast, which is all about the video games. Steve and Pat talking about, you know, fighting games, Dragon Ball Z.
And now people on Twitch who just can't stop saying the N-word.
Oh, is that a thing again?
Oh, my God. You meant multiple people.
Oh, is it? I knew about
it's like the quote that covered it best is like, you've done all the grinding, you've worked super hard, you have legions of fans, tons of people watch your live streams, you've only got one job now, perhaps the most difficult job. Don't say the N-word on stream.
Well, what's that? Was it not PewDiePie?
Ninja.
Well, no, there was that one who dropped it a while ago and got in a lot of
trouble.
That was
PewDiePie.
Okay, that was PewDiePie.
Yeah, that was PewDiePie. And then this the current dude who's the biggest guy on Twitch, who did that stream that got Drake and that other like big time rapper on it. Like, he had like millions
Pitbull?
Of people
Mr.
watching
Worldwide?
His stream. No, it was like Mr. Worldwide. when you read one kanji, Mr. Worldwide.
He's gonna be playing at Naperville's Rib Fest this year, just to let you know.
I wonder if he ever played that. I wonder if he ever played at that Walmart in Alaska.
He did.
Did he?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. He was in on the joke. He knew.
That's good. Pitbull seems like a guy who you'd want to be a real piece of shit, but isn't.
No.
I have a feeling that's how that would go down.
Oh yeah.
You'd be like, man, I hope that guy's a dick, and he's not, and you're like, fuck.
Yeah.
I can't hate him anymore.
It's like Guy Fieri.
You know, you want him to be a dick really bad.
Yeah, but
he's not.
Really nice.
Shit.
Exactly.
It's hard to really dislike people after you like meet them and like find that they're not dicks. You're like, fuck.
Yeah.
I was hoping that guy was a dick.
We'll still meme them, but
yeah, obviously. I'm never fucking drinking that water. I'm Diners, Diamonds, and Dimes. The one dude on Saturday Night Live does a pretty good Guy Fieri.
Oh yeah.
Oh shit! I don't remember what I was talking about.
You were talking about
that Ninja. Yeah. So yeah, he had two really big time rappers, and his stream got over like 1 million views or something, like concurrent people watching, which is absolutely absurd. I've never heard of that many people watching Twitch at the same time. But anyway, he also dropped the N-bomb. Some dude who's a professional CS:GO player also dropped the N-bomb on stream. Like, what the?
Like, and do they lose subscribers over this? Like,
oh no, there's like the. I don't know what happened with Ninja, but the CS:GO guy got like, he's suspended from his team. He got actual like financial repercussions because of it. But it's like,
however, we elect Donald Trump as our president.
What? Well, yeah, but the general populace are better than the people who voted for Donald Trump because they're not the general populace.
Yeah.
They're what, like 20% of the population, I think?
Not even.
So less than 20% of the population voted for Donald Trump. So that means that less than 20% of the population is huge, gigantic garbage who would actually get out of their seats to vote for Donald Trump.
Yeah. Our president can say the N-word and it would have no repercussions.
He'd probably get more votes, actually.
He probably would.
He would actually, I would
from the South.
I would guarantee he'd get more votes.
From the South.
And keep in mind, about 50 minutes south of where we live is also
the South. I would listen to this podcast called Monster Talk, and every time they go to say Monster Talk, they go, Monster Talk!
Monster Talk! That's anyway. Awesome. But this, the weird thing to me is like, why are these dudes like already like in the habit of apparently casually dropping the N-bomb? Like, I've never in my life ever been like, you know, this is gonna be a really good time to drop the N-bomb.
Exactly. Like, you think about it, it's like, wait for it.
Right. Like, no. Like, this is never appropriate. I won't even say it if I'm singing along with song lyrics.
Yeah.
Like, not a chance. Like, it's not my word to say. That's like. Weird. I don't understand, that means these guys are casually using it, which is like, what?
Older Joe would probably use it, but more in like an academic context, like talking about the word. But even nowadays, older Joe, not even going to do that.
I it's not my word to say.
But I mean, what I'm saying is I would never use it in a disparaging way, even though it's kind of hard not to use the word in a disparaging way. It would be a purely like academic, like talking about it, like in terms of like. Like reading Huckleberry Finn.
Sure.
You know, or discussing its use in rap lyrics.
Understood. But like
37-year-old Joe
using it as an expletive. Like, I would never use it as an expletive. And I just don't understand. It's so weird. Like, it's like, what other word can you think of that's like a slur that you would ever think to use like that? And I think that this is actually
cracker.
I think, well, but that's funny. Anyone who gets upset by cracker, totally a racist. It's a really easy way to find out someone's a super racist. If they get actually legitimately upset by the use of the word cracker or being called a cracker, that dude is a racist. But the big thing for me is like, I think, and this is my big brain going here. I think that they're actually just using it as another catapult for more fame because they're getting they have the fame level.
They're getting
already.
Media attention.
Now they're getting the infamy boost because they can get the infamy boost, do the apology tour, and then come back as a net positive. You know, like, okay, so like, yeah. if I've got 5 million subscribers, let's say I take a huge hit with my like with my N-bomb drop and I lose 1 million. By the time I'm done with my apology tour, I've got 7 million.
And that's
what I'm thinking. Cause like, that's the same type of person, the same. Cause I mean,
that's what Abraham Lincoln thought too.
He needed the apology tour boost.
The apology tour boost.
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, unfortunately for him, he got shot.
Yeah. Got shot.
So
our American cousin.
Yeah. See, if it were now, he would have just gotten a lot of dislikes or perhaps a scathing YouTube video.
John Oliver would have done a takedown piece
on Lincoln.
Abraham Lincoln. From the state of Tennessee. And if you even knew where Tennessee was, you know that that's Illinois and not Tennessee.
There you go. You did it. You've cracked the Oliver code.
Yes. So that's that you'll hear more about that on the Play On podcast. We also have Deconstructing Daycare, which what was the newest episode on? I don't know.
I only listened to the first one, which I enjoyed.
Which I enjoyed. Deconstructing Daycare, which hopefully one day they will tackle the hardcore
Caillou questions. I heard they're not going to do Caillou.
They're not going to do Caillou?
No.
Hope they do David the Gnome.
Ooh, I love David the Gnome.
I would have Pat get Steve on to do David the Gnome.
We'd have to find a place to watch David the Gnome.
Steve will just talk about how gnomes are a stupid race in
hashtag
fantasy.
Hashtag spoiler for David the Gnome, but do you remember the ending of David the Gnome?
Yeah, he dies.
Yeah, that they actually like cover death in that show.
Well, yeah,
yeah.
Just like they killed Mr. Hooper.
That's true.
Yeah, Well, I'm gonna be on there. I'm gonna do 70s Sesame Street, like old school Sesame Street, not this
coked
new,
out Sesame Street.
Yeah, like 70s, 80s Sesame Street.
How is the new HBO Sesame Street? Is it still a thing?
Yeah, it's fine. It's a little flashy, a little too flashy for me. Mm. I like everything where they're like, kids, we're going up on the Sesame Street.
Why is it Bill Cosby?
I just think of like 70s, 80s, like Sesame Street, where Oscar the Grouch is coming out of the garbage can covered in needles. Just like, I live in a fucking trash can.
I'm covered in heroin needles.
Good stuff.
Hey, Bert, can't find a vein, Bert.
I wish you wouldn't eat cookies in the damn bed.
And then we also have Comic Book Logic, which will be coming back with X2, X-Men.
Electric Boogaloo.
Electric Boogaloo. And then I think we good on that. Oh, and Weebtown, which is all about our streaming Twitch show, where Steve and Young Giuseppe play Dragon Ball.
Yeah, then soon it'll be Blaze Blue Cross Tag Battle in May, I think.
You just made that name up. That's not a real game.
It's the most bizarre crossover game that kind of came out of nowhere, and everyone's decently excited for it. It's a very odd crossover. It's got characters from Blaze Blue, characters from Persona Arena, which is based off the RPG, characters from Undernight Inbirth, which is was a somewhat obscure game and is now a little bit more like known, but still relatively obscure fighting game, and then the anime show Ruby.
Yeah, but is it a better crossover than Jimmy Neutron when he met Timmy from the Fairly Odd Parents?
I don't know, but it might be a better crossover than when the Power Rangers met the Ninja Turtles.
Oh, yeah.
Good crossover, but I think it might be better than that.
So, Steve, until next time.
Oh, man, War Machine Mark III. It's the greatest miniatures disaster since Confrontation switched to pre-painted plastics.
Game Classy.